I said, listen, I'm not here to let you win. And he's like, no, I'm here to beat you. And we sort of made a pact that we're going to race.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gravel Junction podcast, your meeting place for all things bikes, adventures, and the stories that follow. I'm your host, Charles Detmer. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Gravel Junction podcast. As always, it's a pleasure to have you. Today's show, well, it's someone we've had on before. That's right. In fact, it's our very first guest ever here on the Gravel Junction podcast. Mr. Kevin Benkenstein returns for his second show, second interview, hot on the heels of an amazing second place finish at the recent Rhino Run. I'm sure most of you listening are well aware of the recent race and recent events, but for those of you who aren't aware, the Rhino Run was the inaugural running of the race, starting in Plettenberg Bay in South Africa, going 2,700 kilometers all the way up to Windhoek in Namibia, along some of the most challenging terrain you can imagine. And this route must straight away be up there with one of the toughest ultra endurance races that you can imagine or endure. And Kevin finished second, a mere 17 minutes behind Abdullah Zainab, who, I mean, both riders were just incredible. I'm not sure about you, but I found myself glued to my screen refreshing the dot because it was just back and forth, and just not something you see in an ultra race like this. You tend to see someone gets away at some point. At some point, the elastic band snaps, and these two competitors just would not give in. But I think it was the way they went about it. And then that says a lot about Abdullah as well as Kevin. If you had to ask me how I would describe Kevin, it would be as this fierce competitor on the bike in a race. But the second he steps off, he's welcoming, warm, open. And you can sense that straight away in our discussion. He's not here to hide things. He talks about strengths, weaknesses, fears. And it's so refreshing to hear that because he doesn't have to prove anything to anyone. He's there to prove things to himself. But when he gets on a bike, he's there to beat you. So it's one of the things I love talking to Benki, because the conversation just flows because there's such an honesty and naturalness to it. And hopefully that comes across in the discussion. So we caught up a couple of days, about 10, 11 days after the ride. Kevin slowly getting brain function back after, you know, 2 hours sleep for 8 days, pushing 300-400 kilometers a day, more, staying awake for 24, 25, 26 hours. Truly eye-watering statistics, which we discuss in today's show. But I think that's about enough of an intro. Let's just get straight into it. It's a bit of a longer show because, as you may know, when Kevin and I start talking, it just flows. It's wonderful. So we just had an informal conversation, discussed what went on. Anyway, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Benki. Enjoy. What is it now? 10 days, eh? 10 days since you finished?
11. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. 11.
And how are you feeling? Like, I can't even imagine.
Well, Abdullah and I were chatting this morning, and we both agreed we're still a bit wrecked. I'm trying to be healthier now, and I think that's helping a little bit. Although I must admit to having insane salt cravings, like I can demolish a packet of Lay's at this stage. But yeah, I think it's getting better. My sleep is slightly better. In the day, I feel better every day. I just can't believe you can be so wrecked from 8 days. Like Abdullah has done and won and set the record in Transamerica, in Transam. And he says he's as wrecked from these 8 days as he was from those 16 days. So.
But I mean, the pace you guys were going, I mean, we'll talk about that. We'll get into all the details of it. But on the outside, the lead you guys had, the pace, and I'm guessing you pushed each other, obviously, by virtue of being neck and neck for so long.
Yeah.
But I mean, that pace just seemed
And no one, neither of you capitulated. It just went and went and went. Thank God that you ran out of kilometers. Otherwise, who knows what would have happened.
Thank God. I think, yeah, it was fast, eh? I mean, it was weird because it was never conscious. It was just, you're there and you're doing it. And it's what has to be done. It was never a case of like, okay, cool, this is... I mean, I was way ahead of my time schedules. I've actually got them in front of me so that I've got some notes because I can't remember every little thing. You know, way ahead of time schedule and just rode on like perceived effort, and it got progressively harder. But by the time it got hard, which I would say was like it only got hard after Calvinias, after 1200 Ks.
As dot watching and following the updates, the way you were riding, even the, you know, the look of you on the bike, as you say, up to Calvinia, from the outside point of view, it seemed very controlled. Not that it ever looked out of control, but you looked calm. Like it wasn't, you know, you were happy with your pace, happy with the way the race was going.
Yeah, and it was like relaxed riding. Like it just, I didn't know necessarily every road, but it was just a case of, there was no like physical fatigue in the first 1200 Ks. I got tired at night and just normal stuff, but there was no sense of, oh, flip, I need to tap this back. This is going to go south now. And then I would say after Lurisfontein, which was about 1280, then it got hot. And then it got a little bit more like, okay, I need to manage this. I made a big stuff up in the section after Lurisfontein before Klipbrand, underhydrated. I didn't take enough water with me. I sort of thought it would be a 4.5 hour stretch. It ended up being close to 6 hours because we did some deviation, which I'm still not sure that we were meant to do. I think it was a routing error, but we were like traipsing through farmland, jumping over fences, and there was no discernible road, just following the GPS. And I'd say like from that point on, it was hard, but then we were in it. So friggin' I'll just ride. Like we were done. I was tired. Then it was like, okay, cool. Let's keep this pace. And funnily enough, so both of us exploded at the 1300K mark. We both had to sleep. That's where Abdullah was seeing things. And like he reckons he didn't even know that he was doing the race. He was so zonked out.
Oh, I remember that Instagram footage of you guys were, and you guys neutralized the race for a little bit at that point, and you kind of get some rest because you were both like, whoa.
Yeah, so I slept at Clip Rand at a general dealer, and he slept just after it. And then I started and I caught up to him. And then I actually passed him because he was just waking up and he had just gotten back on the road. And I said, how's it? How are you? Are you okay? And then I started riding and he was just not awake. So I went past him and then he realized, oh, flip, I mustn't let this one go. And he chased me down and he caught me at like flying. And I had to accelerate and then like we sort of raced and passed each other and he passed me and we're going to and fro. And then we realized like this was a stupid game of whatever we were doing. And we kind of rode at the same pace for a little while. And then
is that a new experience for you to be like that so deep into a race? Is that something you've experienced before? Like were you with another guy, like, okay, it's going to be between us. Let's tap it off before something bad goes happen. And then we'll race for it at the end? Or like, what was the thought process?
No, so it wasn't a case of tap it off. The discussion we actually had is, dude, have you seen how far back everyone else is? Like, what's going on here? How did that happen? And we sort of discussed that. And then we're like, man, this must be pretty exciting to watch. We've been yo-yoing and that must be pretty cool. And then we're like, this is how we want to race. And I said, listen, I'm not here to let you win. And he's like, no, dude, I'm here to beat you. And we sort of made a pact that we're going to race. We're not going to just sit back and ride together for 500Ks and then start racing. And I think it was hard to see on the trackers, but between towns, there was a lot of to and fro. So you'd get to like you'd see a long climb and then, or it'll get to a rough section or something where one of us thought we could take an advantage. And we'd get like a minute. But on a tracker, a minute doesn't show because it only updates every 10 minutes. So you can't see, okay, Kevin's ahead or Dilla's ahead.
Yeah, it wasn't like the last 100Ks, you could see there was just enough of a gap because all of a sudden you'd be in front and then Abdullah would be in front. And you know, I'm sitting there 2 a.m. going, what's going on? Like tripping out. But as you say, if there's only a minute or two, we don't see that. We'll only get the catch up when you guys are at the rest points. But that's what I wanted to ask you. So if you made that kind of decision where you're racing, knowing you still had all those rest stops till the end. So it was a case of like race. Okay, stop and then see who can, like were you checking each other out for like, how long is he going to rest for? How long is he going to sleep for? What was your process there?
Yeah, so we would race between towns and it was kind of a case of, let me see if I can crack him. Because listen, 10Ks before a town, there's no point. Because what you're going to pull, 5 minutes and then you both have to stop at the only shop in town. And then you're together. And then it's easier to like, you know, one guy to cut a stop short or something is relatively easy. But my idea was like, I want to push him. We're both like on like the absolute edge of our limit. So maybe I go hard enough and he chases and then explodes completely. And I put an hour into the oak in 20Ks. Or he has to just stop, especially in the night. You know, you really wanted to, like, I was just trying to crack him, like, and he was trying to crack me. I mean, I was looking at some stuff from, like, a Namibia section on the D707, which was a 200K section. And funnily enough, it happened just after the media guys left us. Anyway, so there was this 10-minute climb. And I was feeling pretty good still. And I was like, no, we're racing this. And we started drag racing each other. And it was, we are now 2,200Ks into a race. And we were drag racing. And it was like full on, like as hard as I could go. And I got 50 meters and then 100 meters and then 200 meters. And then I had a minute and then we got to a sandy section. I kept pushing. And I mean, like, for the number people, I went and looked this morning on Strava because Abdullah asked me, and I did like 280 watts for like 15 minutes, which isn't a lot on like a Wednesday morning, but at 2,200Ks, so like absolute maxing out. But then what happened is I got 5 minutes, and then we both exploded because it was 45 degrees. But I couldn't see him. So I was like, well, maybe he's exploded more than me. Maybe when I get to the next stop, he's going to be an hour back. I don't know. Like, and then cars would come past. Oh, we just gave your friend, like we just saw him. So do you need anything? So you knew like, okay, cool, he's 10 minutes back or whatever. But then what happened is we got to better camp there and then we were both hammed. I mean, out of like, there was another town just before the last town in South Africa before the border. There was like a 20 or 30K tar section coming out of it. And it was this crosswind. And Abdullah went to the front. So you like climbed out of town. And then it was this gentle 1% downhill for 15Ks. And Abdullah was 100 meters ahead of me, just going as hard as he could go. Crosswind from the left. And we're just going. And it's like on the limit, 15Ks. Come on. You're tucking, you're trying to see how aero you can get, full on. And then there's a right turn. I just knew like, okay, this right turn's coming because we're turning right to go towards the border. And then it's going to be a tailwind. So I just have to be within like 100 meters or 200 meters of them. And I'm like timing the gap and it's like 15 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, 15 seconds. And it's going. And then we turn right. And it's like, oh, that was a waste of energy. We've just smashed each other for half an hour and now there's a tailwind and this perfectly smooth road. No one's getting away. So then you're like, okay, cool. We've done that for 30 minutes. And then you like ride together, but you're watching the Oaks pedal stroke and you're watching when he needs to stop. Do you need a pee, but do you want to suggest a pee? Because what if he doesn't need to pee? Because like the amazing thing, actually, I'm really proud of it. My hydration was such a huge focus. Other than that one section where I blew up to a million pieces, you know, I kept having to take a piss. Both of us actually, I mean, I told him he's my Aussie twin. We both seem to have to like, we have to make a stop to pee every hour or hour and a half. And then,
yeah, because you're hydrating so much.
Yeah. Because like you're trying to drink like a liter an hour. I'm not carrying 9 liters on my back for fun. Like I'm going to drink it. And you need to stop to fill up bottles. And so you're like trying to find this weird gentleman's agreement. We're like, okay, let's both do things at the same time so that the racing is fair. But then you get to a really hard section. And then you're like, well, if he needs to stop, that's his problem. And there were times like I had to pee, like I'm going to piss my pants, which is not ideal with chafe. And then you have to stop and pee, and then you just see the soak disappearing, and you're like, I would like literally look at my watch, and I'm like, okay, that was 40 seconds. Like, I'm going to make up 40 seconds now. And you're like, ah, go. And then you get back where you can see him. Well, there's a super steep climb.
But I mean, this is two 2,000 Ks in. What is that sort of, like the mental fatigue of having to do all that? You know, that must have played a factor as well. Like that's like the coherent, how coherent were you to be doing all of this? It just sounds exhausting in itself.
Until the last night, I think I was pretty on it. It definitely caught up with me that last night I was the worst I've ever been at bikes. But it was strange. It was almost, you're doing it, so you just have to do it. I mean, It's hard to explain other than saying that. There you are, you're racing. If you don't do it, this other guy's going to ride away from you.
You're in the moment, right? It's like you go through it.
Yeah, and I think the lucky thing is that kind of bodies have very similar failure points. There's certain times of the day that are kind of hard for everyone. So just before sunrise, just before sunset, everyone... those aren't nice times to be riding your bike when you've been up for 20 hours. And so you have these ebbs and flows in the race where, okay, early in the morning, you can kind of use the fact that this guy's within 100 meters of you always to stay awake because it gives you a little bit more alertness. But just knowing that you're actually racing someone as opposed to like, just trying to average a certain speed and you haven't seen anyone in 2 days, that made the mental side significantly easier because there was always someone to think about. And it really felt like the two of us went on this big bike ride and just smashed each other for 3 days or 4 days or 5 days, however long that last bit where we were kind of a little bit closer. Because the first few days we didn't really see each other much after like, what, so like the first 300 Ks were pretty close to each other, but then it was very like separate and our time schedules never molded. Where like after clip round, they really synced.
Yeah, I wanted to just go back a little bit then, because when we spoke a little bit before the race, I remember you'd mentioned you were, you know, we'll get into now your preparation for the race, but at one point, the entree, as they call it, the first half, that was potentially all you were going to do, right? Just kind of do that part. You then ended up winning the entree, which I want to kind of go into as well, because the time that you did that in, has that changed your mindset as far as like, I think of a race like Unbound XL, you know, these shorter ultra distance, if you want to call it that, you know, that did that sort of, that performance in that entree, how did you feel after that? Were you, that's what you were expecting? You surprised yourself? Like, where did that leave you, if that makes sense, as far as future events go?
No, I'm pretty good for 24 hours. I've backed myself. I know I'm good at 24 hours because that's what I practice. I've got a ride here that I do from home that's like 450, 500 Ks and 10,000 meters. And I know that I can always, even when I'm a bit chonk, I can do that in like 25, 26 hours. And I'd said to Michaela when I was planning to just do the intro because I didn't have the, like, I'll get into it, but, you know, so when I was just planning to do the intro, I wanted to break 36 hours. But then I would have been on 45 more tires, and, like, I would have gone with a faster setup because I didn't have to worry about anything. And I was surprised I was so fast, even though I was so loaded. I mean, I started with a day of nutrition on the bike. I had 26 bars and a kilo of energy drink. So I started with like 3 kilos of food on the bike that wasn't in my bottles, plus water bottles and all of that. But I think that actually benefited me. So yeah, like you said, when we spoke before, I was just planning to do the entree. I think maybe self-confidence, like the confidence to do big races is pretty tough. I mean, like, we don't have the opportunity in South Africa. It's the first time I've done more than like a 1100K race since 2017. And like in 2017, I didn't really have the right, I shouldn't have been doing that one. It destroyed me. But I felt like it was too much to ask for my family. You know, it's 2 weeks away. Plus, like, I've been absolutely useless for like the first week afterwards, you know. And then, so I didn't quite have that in me. And then the field got really good. And I'm very motivated by other riders. I don't want to pretend that I just do these rides for the experience. Like, I want to beat people. And I want to test my own performance level. Like, I only entered Manga last year because Lachlan Morton entered. And then he didn't ride because of the whole COVID situation. But that's why I was doing that race. And then, like, here you've got Abdullah, Sophia, and Lael was obviously meant to come and then didn't. Josh Arbert, Adrian, who didn't race in the end. He was there just to ride. But, you know, I'm probably missing Sarah, of course. Like, I hadn't raced Sarah since 2017. I consider her one of my best friends. And like the chance to race her in a race that I thought was really going to suit her, like that was huge. So, you know, you've got this field and it's like, well, I've been sitting on the couch telling potential sponsors over the years, like, I want to go race Tour Divide. I want to go race Silk Road. I want to go race Atlas. I believe I can beat the best in the world. I arrogantly sit on my couch and say that, which is easy. And then they were here. So as it got closer, I was like a little bit more keen to do it. Then I broke my elbow at the end of, was it August? I messaged John Wakefield, my coach. I said, oh, just ride till Rhino Run. Like, there's no ways I'm going to be ready. And then, but I, like, Manga was now in December. And I was like, okay, cool. Let me, I think that's more realistic. But so I took a week off. And then I got back on the trainer. And I just had this drive within me. I was like, I'm not going to be bad. Like, I have to be, if I want it, this is what I do. This is what I love. I want to be good. I can't go to Manga and get beaten. Like, that's not happening. So I'm going to train really hard. So I trained as hard as I could on the trainer, but you can still, like, you're not doing 6-hour, 7-hour rides on the trainer because they're just bad for you. So I think I got up to like 4.5 hours, but riding Zwift is pretty good because you can't freewheel. And then this field just started developing. And I said to John, I was like, listen, I can't even ride outside yet, but I'm going to do this race. Like, as long as I get the all clear from the doctor on my elbow, I'm doing it. In the end, I just never bothered to go to a doctor. I just spoke to one on the phone. But when I started riding outside 2 or 3 weeks before the race, I had no pain. I wasn't thinking about my elbow. And then I was like, well, I'm going to do this. The air flights are half the price. But I don't have to worry about visas. I don't have to worry about spending dollars. Logistics are easier for me. I know, like, what's going on. I'm going to take this opportunity because you just don't know. Like, maybe I don't get it again.
Yeah, it's a good platform, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, this is what I want to do. I want to race. I mean, my dream is to win Tour Divide. That's why I do these races. So now I had this opportunity. So yeah, so I decided just to take it. And I spoke to Ryan. I said, cool, I'm in. I mean, Ryan even said to me, he's like, oh, I didn't think you were going to do it. And like, I genuinely wasn't. I don't I don't commit so well 6 months in advance, but I'm committed to Tour Divide next year. Like, I'm going to find a way, but like, generally I haven't been committed, and I had health and whatever issues last year, but now the time was there, my form was good, and I thought, well, who knows what's going to happen, but if you don't get on the start line, you're not going to know. And then even in the build up to the race, you know, I think like the Saturday before, we had like a really nice, or Sunday before, we had a really nice family lunch, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Why am I going to do this race? Like, this is so nice. Like, I could just hang out at home, play with my kids, I dig it. Like, just do that. And then, you know, anyway, my flights were booked, so I kind of had to go. And then, like, I'm down in Ted, I phone Michaela, I'm like, Christ, I'm like, am I really doing this? You know, like, it's so hard, man.
Asking yourself the why, like, why am I doing this?
Yeah. And then, but I knew I just had to get to, like, I was saying it, but I never, like, I was just expressing feelings. It's normal to be nervous. I mean, as well as I rode, you know, I could have come eighth or ninth just as easily. Like, they're really good riders there. And then, yeah, like, the morning of the day before, I felt good on the bike. Matt helped. Michaela was like, just, you know, just do this. You can do this. I always just need that person. She believes in me endlessly. So, you know, there you are. So you're on the start line, and then I race hard. Like, that's what I do. I mean, you were at the feeder. Like, I don't, not there to sit around. I decided as soon as we get to the first climb, I'm going. I'm racing that hard, and I'm making it hard from the start. And you've got Steve Halligan. I mean, he's there.
The packed field, I remember looking at it, like, I had Lael on the show just a couple of weeks before, and I know originally she had planned, but even she said, the field is one of the best fields you've seen at an ultra race. And sure, not everyone, you know, it was the end of a longer season, so maybe some of the riders weren't where they need to be, but I mean, you take it, that takes nothing away from yourself and Abdullah, the level you guys rode at. I think anyone on that start line, even if they were at full capacity, that would have been, this would have been maybe a few more players at the pointy end, but you guys would have whittled them down. Because as you say, that I think we probably crashed the WhatsApp servers a couple of times with the chat, the banter that was going on, trying to follow on, like, get on the dot. You seeing this? It was like, I'm a bit of a fan of this stuff, and I have been for quite a few years. And I will put in the effort and watch these dots in these various races, but I've never been as kind of encaptured as this race has. And I wanted to kind of ask you that. I'm sure afterward you would have seen, but during the ride, you know, there would have been long periods of no signal, no contact. Were you aware of sort of the support for you back home during the race?
Yeah. So, I mean, just to, like, I try really hard to not, like, no Instagram, no Facebook or anything, no, like, no social media for the first law. I mean, really till very late in the race, I didn't check, I didn't go into any of the WhatsApp groups, but, you know, I WhatsApp Michaela, and you can't help but see that you've got like 60 messages to read, and that the WhatsApp groups are like hundreds and hundreds of messages deep. And Michaela was just saying, the whole South Africa is watching. Everyone knows about this. Everyone's behind you. Like, she's obviously trying to motivate me. So I had an idea that it was slightly bigger deal than I'd expected. I mean, you don't really expect people to be at a mountain bike stage race and watching your obscure ultra. But I think it's quite a, like, Michaela was doing Wines to Wales, and she reckoned she'd get to a water table and the people at the water table would tell her I was doing. You know, so, which is cool. Like, that's, I mean, you don't think, unless you're seriously deep in your own backside, you don't think, oh, I want to inspire people. But it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that people can get excited about ultra racing. Like, it's what I love. I mean, especially like this. Like, this is pure. This is proper bike racing. And for people to get excited about that and to make it, yeah, and to make it more exciting and to put on a show, and like, you're never going to see me race for second. If I start racing for second, just take my bike away. And just stop me racing. You know, I've passed that stage in my life. And I think it was a great coincidence that Abdullah and I both sat on the start line thinking, let's make this hard. I've got a lot of respect for Sophie Ann and Steve and Josh and Sarah. I mean, Sarah hadn't raced in a long time, and I felt like she probably wouldn't want to empty the tank straight out the gate, but because she thinks she's not a climber, even though she's actually a really good climber. But I figured all these, especially the men in the field, were really, they'd had a long year, and I didn't think that they would be keen to go full gas out the gun. And so I figured, well, if we do that, we get a mental edge on them. And ultimately, it's a mental game. And I think that's, I believe that's what happened. I think if we'd ridden gently and just done 300 k's a day, I have no doubt that Sofiane and Max Rees and Steve would have been with us.
They would have ridden themselves into the race a little bit more.
Yeah, because once you've done 2 or 3 days, it kind of levels out that fatigue because everyone's got it. And I think the motivation comes, like if Sofiane's in the lead group, that oak is not sitting back and just letting you take it. He's a racer. But I also think that in other races, maybe the start is a bit different. And, you know, like I don't come from I've raced now 2 long distance ultras in my life. Abdullah comes from the roadside where they do 500, 600 Ks on day one. And so both of us had a slightly different approach to things and like maybe a little bit of ignorance. And so we went hard. And I think that benefited us over the course of the next few days, because that just is a different way to race these races compared to what has maybe been done more recently at, say, I don't know, at Silk Road or Tour Divide.
So has that changed your point of view on, so after this experience, and you say you're still kind of processing and still recovering, and you know it'll probably take some time, but as far as your ability to compete with these, you know, other top level riders, how has that changed your approach, if it has, to, you know, you want to do Tour Divide, Silk Road, those sort of things? Has that empowered you more, feeling like I can definitely stand with these boys and girls at these races, even though you might have known that before, but where did this race leave you afterwards?
I think I believed it before and I told myself that before, but now I know that for sure. I've done it. And that changes everything, because now it's not just about at the race, it's in the training. So when you're training to win. You're training to do things, you know, where before you're like, you're training and you're like, okay, I just want to be my best. I want to see how good I can be. Where now you're like, okay, I've shown that, yeah, unfortunately, Sofiane and the guys and Josh, like Josh didn't finish, but I think just the time that we did the race in was, even that was quite wild. So that was like a day ahead of expectations. And so, you know, like, okay, if I go to another race, be it a week long or 2 week long race, I know that I can, without being arrogant or cocky or whatever, I can actually say, okay, I'm here to compete. I'm here to win. And it's the same, you know, obviously you need sponsorship in this sport. I haven't had any financial backing. I've got only Garmin, and then, you know, that's just the product sponsorship. You know, so now I can justify going to a potential sponsor and saying, my name's Kevin and I'm trying to, this is what I've done and this is what I'm going to try and achieve. And this is how I race and this is the type of person that I am. And I think I've got a little bit more, like the word I've used is validation. You know, I validated my existence in this space. And like that's huge. Yeah, you know, I think the evolution of me as a rider from being wanting to be a roadie pro back in the day, you know, growing up racing, and you know what I've sort of taught myself. And I know in 2017 I did Race to the Rock, but I had no right to be there. I had no understanding. I realized that, and afterwards I've dedicated myself to learning and learning about my body and learning about what it takes to perform, and watching these races and watching other people train. And this year I got myself a coach with John Wakefield, who's been massive in changing my physiological side of how I prepare. But now you've got this extra confidence and extra belief. And it's not to say every race will go perfectly. Probably going to get my ass kicked at Tour de Vide.
Like, what would make you say that? Would that be because of the structure of the race? I know you say it in, with a bit of tongue in cheek, but is it what's the thing about that race that just makes it so incredibly tough?
The record is 14 days. Like, it's 14 days of body management. There's snow and rain and heat, and there are factors with it that are a lot easier than like a race like the Iron Run. You know, resupply is not an issue. The surface is a lot better. But you can't get away from the fact that 14 days is 14 days, you know. So you've got 13 nights of no of 3 hours of sleep and different body management. And, you know, so that's a whole nother stepping stone. But I would be very disappointed to go there and not be good.
Compete.
Yeah, I mean, give myself a chance, you know. That's how I race. So give myself a chance. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And I can be happy if you gave it a go, but I never want to come second and not have given myself the chance to win. But if you come second and you gave yourself every chance to win, then someone's better than you. That's okay. It's like,
well, I think you could say the same for the Rhino Run. You know, I can no question the disappointment, but to finish 17 minutes at that pace after that distance, like as you say, you put it all out there, and it was clear for all of us to see, us as spectators. We were so proud, as I say, on the WhatsApp group. It was phenomenal because there wasn't a shadow of a doubt, not that there would have been a doubt before, but just the performance that both of you guys rode at was inspiring. And you could see, here's two guys on a bike, they just want to race. It didn't matter if anyone was watching or not. It was pure. And as you say, that's what this sort of racing is about, which was amazing.
Yeah, it's special because, you know, it's like there's no, I mean, like people say, oh, what was prize money? Like, none, negative 50 grand. You know, it's actually, like, that's how much it costs. So it's negative 50 grand.
Yeah.
But at the same time, neither of us really questioned that. You know, and we knew that you're racing for your own pride and you're to make yourself chuffed. And so you have to be very self-motivated. Because there's no real reward other than feeling good about yourself and feeling good about what you did. Mm. I mean, it's nice. People say, well done, and that's really nice. But that doesn't like give you the overwhelming drive. You have to have the drive within yourself. So it's quite a thing to have done. I think I'm probably still processing some of it. Doing this for recovering, you can probably see my lips are still. Oh god, they're terrible.
No, I can imagine, man. Like,
well, good thing we didn't do this a week ago because I probably have fallen asleep by now. but yeah, I mean, like that's the thing with these races is that what we were just talking about, like my love for self-supported stuff. I think anyone who tries to compete in them is very driven, very focused on the bike, and you have to have a certain ethos around it because the rewards, there are very few guys who can truly call it their career. I mean, most of us have to go back to work not on the Monday afterwards, but like a few days later, you actually have to get back to work and do what you do. And so it's really like most of the guys are working class and so, you know, you're there for the love of it, for your enjoyment, for your satisfaction. And then afterwards you go back to your life and that's rad. Like, I'm happy. I mean, you know, go back to picking up kids from school and selling bikes to people and making them happy. So, I'm stoked with that side of my life. And you can just carry on. Yeah, it's a special type of people who do this racing.
Yeah. What was just quickly, just to go back a little bit, the Rhino Run, what was the origins of that? Maybe you can just quickly give us a bit of a background into how that race, how it even came about.
So Ryan Flynn from Curve, who instigated all of this, he is ex-South African. Well, ex-Swazi, South African, British, Aussie. And he 2019, decided it would be cool to do a race. And I mean, we spoke about starting it in Durban and finishing it in Cape Town. And then in 2019, must have been a year before the pandemic, after coming riding through Lesotho, then he did some touring going up. You know, they drove the route, and originally it was going to be a fundraiser for Rhino stuff, which never happened. But I think the Masaka fundraising was as important. And yeah, so it was his love for Africa and his desire to get a bike race, yeah, that represented this and took people across some really amazing places and showed, you know, I mean, I think it showed that you can do long distance self-supported races in South Africa. I think a lot of South Africans thought it was stupid to take a, you know, everyone's got a pessimistic view about what's safe. And it was fantastic. I mean, lots of the guys, I spoke to lots of the riders afterwards, and they're all very happy and felt very safe and enjoyed the terrain and the landscapes and the people and, you know, loved South Africans and Namibians. I mean, Namibians might be the most excited, happy people on earth, because no one goes, like, yeah, it's a long way and they don't have a huge population. So you get a whole lot of tourists. But yeah, Namibia, I mean, Namibians are amazing and they're so kind to us and just welcomed us to their town and their community. And yeah, so I think what Ryan did is fantastic, and I hope that it's a race that continues. I can't imagine racing it.
Well, on that, like, let's just say it. It would you do it again?
Oh, God.
It's too early to ask that.
No, I mean, like, I would go back and do what we did again. Oh, geez, the idea of, like, can you imagine the expectation?
The expectation, but also I feel that terrain, having ridden parts of it, I've not done Namibia, right? But it's brutal, brutal terrain, temperatures. That's got to be one of the toughest terrain-wise. Like, you think of Silk Atlas, like, obviously also extreme races, but I can't imagine they're miles away from being a testing event as the runner. I mean, there's what you had. I heard you had hyenas, you had lions, you had the dirt, you had the wind. I mean, nasty.
I think, like, from a terrain perspective, I mean, my only reference is Race to the Rock, which is harder than this, but only because of the resupplies. You know, you've got 300K gaps. But I don't think there are any races that have such consistently long resupply gaps. Access to water is always a challenge, and such huge heat. So I think it's probably the toughest terrain. It's definitely in the top two hardest terrain-wise and conditions-wise. And then, yeah, I guess you get to decide how hard you ride it. And you can make it as hard as you want. But, yeah, there's no way to make it easy, though. And I think that separates it. I think I would say that Silk Road, Rhino Run, Race to the Rock can all... That broken claim to be the three hardest terrain races in the ultra world right now. But that said, Rhino Run was, like, the whole route was beautiful.
And your equipment, you were happy with how that went?
Yeah, I just packed too much. I took a sleeping bag. I should have taken a bivy. I took too many warm clothes. I took too many wet clothes. But I think that's just a bit of an experience. Like I said, this is the first time I've done a race of this length in 5 years.
But what if you needed those items? What if all of a sudden the temperatures were unseasonal and you're cold and you need your sleeping bag? Then it's like, you could argue, would you suffer more by not having it?
Yeah, so I mean, like, I think, that's what I say, like, I definitely would have taken a bivy, but that would have been fine. But that's all, like you said, it's all... Given the conditions that we had, I took too much. But I also know that Calvinia can be -2 even in summer. So maybe local knowledge was a hindrance in that way, because if you just look at it from the outside, you go, oh, it's a desert, it's going to be hot. When you've ridden in December in the same area and it's been 2 degrees and you're freezing your ass off, that's in your mind, and you are just aware that it's possible. So I mean my bike was perfect. I wouldn't change. I would ride the same bike again.
Tire choice. Like, I know you lose sleep over tire choice. Okay. So were you happy with your tire choice?
Oh, God. Yeah. It's easier with this one because it's not a gravel bike. I was happy. 2.4s were good. Abdullah said he would have ridden 2.4s in hindsight. That bloody sprint for the finish. I wish I'd been on a gravel bike, but maybe I wouldn't have been there for the sprint to the finish if I was on a gravel bike.
But by that point, would equipment have made a difference at that point? Like, I actually wanted to ask you kind of to just maybe take us through that last. Like, was there a point where you realized that you didn't have it in the tank to close the gap, or you didn't know until the end because you didn't know the gap, etc.? Like, what was those last few hours like?
So at the last place where we could get a resupply, Roy Saint Lodge, made the mistake of going into WhatsApp groups, and actually made me panic. But I had like an hour lead after the final climb, which I went probably too hard up that final climb. I probably emptied my tank about 100 k's early. I had like an hour over the top of that climb, and then an hour later, that's when the sleep monster sits. So at that point, I'd been awake for 24, 25 hours. And I knew I was falling asleep. And I think in hindsight, I should have just lain down on the side of the road for 20 minutes, got in a ditch and just slept for 20 minutes and then got going again. I think that would have possibly changed the outcome, but I didn't. I had 3 Cokes, so that made no difference. No amount of sugar was waking me up. The caffeine and the Cokes didn't even touch sides, but that's probably because I'd drunk 10 Cokes a day for a week. So I say if you take like from 100 Ks to the finish to like 40 Ks to the finish, I don't really remember it. I have a couple of flashbacks. I had really bad tunnel vision, which was pretty scary. It was like being in Star Wars, you know, when they go like full light speed. That's kind of what the rocks in the road looked like. I couldn't get any pace going. I had no power in my legs. And then this guy sort of appeared running on the right-hand side of me. He wasn't real. But anyway, he was always there. And then at some point I looked back and I saw Abdullah's headlight. And then I was like, okay, it's time now. You've got to So I literally slapped my face. I was like, come on, you don't go. And I managed to hold him off for a little while. And then he caught up to me, big adrenaline rush. And then for like 20 minutes. I've actually gone on Strava and looked, because I was wearing a heart rate monitor and I had a power meter on my bike. I didn't look at it during the race, but I wanted it for after the fact because I need to get better. So I wanted to know what it took. And so for 20 minutes after 2,700 Ks, I managed to do 250 watts with like a peak of like 800 watts. But interestingly, my max heart rate in that period was 131. And my average heart rate was like 118. So it just shows how suppressed your heart becomes. You know, it just can't beat anymore. But 250 watts for 20 minutes after 2,700 Ks, I went as deep as I could go, and I went and I went and I went, and my Abdullah just had one more kick at me. And like, it was literally like, I think there were 2 little kickers left, and on the second last kicker, he opened up 50 meters, and I just, on the next downhill, I couldn't get closer, and on the next kicker, he pulled out. And that was that, though, and shit happens.
Shit happens. Well, as I could say, I was watching it live. I was lying in bed here, watching the dot in the dark, watching there. It was about 1 o'clock here, so I don't know what time, 2 o'clock at home. and just going back and forward, back and forward. And then they had the live feed going, and it was amazing to watch and to see. And you could see when Abdullah came across the line, of course, he was shattered. He was empty. But the respect he had, like one of the first things he asks, like, you know, where's Benki? And but it wasn't from he knew he had won, but he obviously has massive respect for what you guys had been through together, which was lovely to see.
Knowing how we raced and the attitude we had, and I think we had like agreed the fastest rider wins. And you're okay with that if you've tried to be the fastest rider. I think I was quite shell-shocked. Could not believe it closed an hour, and I couldn't believe my body had fallen apart. But, yeah, I mean, like, there's a photo of me at the finish. You can see I'm, like, disappointed. So empty. Just everything gone. I mean, like, I've almost had concussion symptoms for the last week. Dizziness, and you've just pushed your body to the absolute brink. And, yeah, I think there's huge respect between Abdullah and I. I think, like, there's sort of only him and I can actually understand what we did and how hard we pushed and how stupidly we raced. Like, I could tell you, oh, we attacked each other on climbs, but I think only him and I can recognize how hard we attacked and how hard we pushed and, like, what we tried to get out of ourselves. And so, yeah, there's a lot of respect and definitely, like, a friendship that formed just through the race. And that's just from the mutual respect as a racer. Yeah, so you end up with this attitude where you sort of develop a friendship, but you're kind of racing and you have to hate the guy in a way. Like, you don't want him to win, but you know that it's just two guys going. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of respect there. And I think so there were two Namibians and that came out to see the end, husband and wife, Henri and Neil, and they, Abdullah thought it was my parents. And so he's like, oh man, I was attacking you. And I thought, oh, I can't do this in front of his parents. Obviously it wasn't my parents, but he wanted to apologize for that. Yeah, I think that's like...
It's a healthy respect.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just, it's nice. And I hope I never, ever have to race him again.
Well, I was going to say that to kind of close things off here, that experience, no matter the actual results, surely not just from a physical and performance point of view, but I think racing someone like Abdullah in the form you guys were, it really it opened your eyes or showed you what you're capable of. As you said, you always believed it, but now actually seeing it, and he pushed you to be better and vice versa. There's no question you did the same for him. So that must, knowing you going into these other events, whether he's there or not, knowing where you're able to go, like you can be riding next to someone and all of a sudden you can have a flashback to those last 2Ks in Namibia, knowing what you're capable of doing. That must be a little bit of a good feeling to have that mentally.
For sure. I think racing is a lot about just reinforcing positive experiences so that you lose the fear of doing things. And I think that I can have a lot of confidence about what my body's capable of and what my mind's capable of. And sure, you still have to do the work. You have to do the training. You know, I need to learn. There are a lot of skills I need to learn. I need to get quicker at resupplies. But at the same time, I don't have to stand back, and I can realistically, you know, I don't have to ride next to Sofiane and be scared of him. I don't have to ride next to Adrian and be scared of him. I don't have to ride next to Abdullah and be scared of him. You know, or Jake and Avari or Lael or Sarah or Steve, you know, all these guys that I've looked at and thought, they're going to be hard. I kind of hope that now we can look at each other and go, well, this is going to be hard because we're both here. And I think that's a different... It's weird. It's weird because I come from a family of sports people. My dad's side of the family specifically are like insanely talented cricketers and hockey players. And so I've sort of grown up cousins who play national sports and international sports. I'm 36 now, and finally I'm like at that level that is kind of semi-normal in my family. You have to normalize racing those people. They cannot be your heroes. I respect them, and what I love admiration for what they've achieved. I've tried really hard to not be a fan of any of them, because that's not healthy if you're going to race someone. Try to focus on their weaknesses, not their strengths. And I hope that they do the same. I hope that they find my weaknesses so that I can get better. Sounds so arrogant. But I can line up against the best in the world and say, I'm one of you.
Well, I don't think it's arrogant, because if you don't believe it, it's not going to happen. So that's the first point, right? Like, you have to believe it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. You have to convince yourself of it, at least.
Well, I would argue that before you were convincing yourself, and then after this performance, you've kind of proved it to yourself, going, right, you know, if you've put the hard work and you put the training, luck has to go everyone's way. We know that as well. But the pieces are there.
Yeah. I mean, I had a mechanical freak. Sure, preparation counts and stuff with your bike. Like, I really believe a lot of no mechanicals is correct choices beforehand. But yeah, I mean, like, I'm excited. I want to go. I need to be busy putting together a little portfolio so that I can actually go to sponsors and, you know, go to the brands that I've already been using. And I can go to Tour Divide. And
the WhatsApp groups are like, just get Benki to the start line of these rides.
Yeah, so that's what I'll say. Like, I am going to do everything within my means to be at Tour Divide next year. And I'm going to be there to race, and I'm going to do all the preparation. And I want to be there to try and win. So that's my overriding goal for the next 7 or 8 months. I mean, I haven't ridden my bike yet since this race. I will tomorrow, but on the indoor trainer for 40 minutes. But I think that's a realistic goal. And I hope that I can show, my goal really is just to show what I'm capable of, but also what I think South Africans are capable of, because we've got an incredible number of extremely talented ultra distance racers in this country, many of whom have incredible engines, probably bigger than mine. And I think that if we start getting over there, we can actually be a force to be reckoned with, because we're hard and stubborn and really, really difficult to deal with, because we've been told our whole lives that you compete. You know, we grew up in a competitive environment in this country, and so you've got a whole bunch of guys who, and girls, who just love to compete. So that's the goal, and then hopefully when I'm there, I can make it exciting.
Well, man, I think you're an ambassador, whether it's intentional or not. I think you're a leading ambassador for that movement, and I think it's something that it'd be an unwise man that bet against you being at the start line of that Tour Divide next year, because we obviously all want to see you there, because you wouldn't be there to make up the numbers, you'd be there to really compete. And like you said, what is available in South Africa is, like, there's this wealth of stubborn, hard racers who could, you know, look at the likes of Matt Beers, which, you know, everyone's well aware of. They just need the opportunity. And so that's why I think we're all going to push for you to be there and to show what we can do and what you can do. Man, that's exciting.
Yeah. And to make keep making ultra racing fun to watch. Who knew that dog watching could be an exciting thing? I think that's
it seriously affected my work performance that week. Very little work was done.
I'm glad. Well, that's the goal. I want to make you bad at your job next June for 2 weeks. Well, hopefully 13 and a half days, not 14 days.
You're my first ever guest on Gravel Junction. Now you come on the second time. I look the third time to be, you know, a week or 10 days after Tour Divide, and to hear, you know, those sort of stories. So that's what we can aim for. You know, that'll be episode 3 of Benki on the Gravel Junction.
That's the deal.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, dude. Well, I mean, it goes without saying, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for articulating so well only 10 days after the race. And look forward to seeing you back on the bike, man.
Thanks, man. Speak soon.
Another show down. I'm not sure about you, but that ultra endurance thing, I'm not sure I'm cut out for that. Okay, I know I'm not cut out for that, but there is a small part of me that's slightly intrigued. Let's say 24 hours, see how far I could ride in 24 hours. Could I stay awake for 24 hours? maybe that's something I'll look to do the next time it's a little bit warmer and drier. Training's going well on my side, so getting some level of fitness back, get to the point where I might be able to suffer through a 24-hour slog just to tick that box. What about you? Interest you in any sort of way? There's more and more events out there, so I guess the options are there should you want to dip the toe in the ultra endurance pond. As always, everybody, thank you for joining us. Thank you for the support. If you'd like to show your support, please head over to wherever you listen to your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon. Give it a rating or just click 5 stars. You know, one click. It really makes a big difference in us getting seen in this increasingly populated world of podcasting. But that's all we have time for. We'll hopefully see you again soon. Until then, you keep riding. Bye for now.